Hey, Steve, when you go to conventions, what do you go for?
Hardcore gaming.
Pretty much, right?
Absolutely.
So, when you see a convention coming up in the Chicagoland area, like Dragonfall, what are you going there to do?
I'm going there to play some games.
And that's right. So, for those who are interested, Dragonfall is a two-day gaming convention, October 15th and 16th at Pheasant Run in St. Charles. This is the second year. They are having two-day 40K championships with the ITC format at 1850 points. They're also going to have a two-day event for Kings of War, one of your favorite games.
Nice.
And they're also having a two-day X-Wing event and a lot of single-day events, including Infinity, Bolt Action, Ninth Age using the Ninth Age scenarios, Arena Rex, which is...
Arena Rex!
I was going to say a game that we both love.
That's a good one.
X-Wing, X-Wing Hangar Bay, and X-Wing Trench Run, which was at the Bolt Action Room in Adepticon, if you saw it, which was a neat-looking table. If you guys are interested, you go to www.dragonfall.com. That's dragon-fall.com, where you have all your information needs.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Hey, guys. Welcome to Game Classy.
Hello.
Hey, we're not going to do a cold open.
Jeez.
We normally go in, you know, like talking about something, and then it like fades in, and then Steve's like, so about that stuff that happened to my anus the other day, you know, and then, you know, that's when we gradually transition into gaming news. We're not doing that today. We're recording once again on a Wednesday night because Steve is going to be out at a Star Trek convention all weekend. Where's
that? That was especially for that one guy who's
Space, the Final Frontier.
That's for that one guy who was really upset when we talked about Star Trek.
Oh yeah, he was very upset.
Yeah, I want to mention Star Trek every cast now.
Oh yeah, we're doing it for sure. Where's it at?
Just wait until the RPG comes out. It is in Rosemont at the Westin.
Okay, is it at the Westin? All right. Yeah. I was contemplating going, but I'm going to be on baby duties.
I am a genius.
Oh no!
Oh, no. it's like, cracked me up.
it's everything that you say. You're like, psh, I know how to play this game. I'm a genius at it. And you're like, oh no, I've lost.
I love it.
How could this happen? Every board game with Steve. All right, so Steve, you wanna crack into the big news? We're catching it on the hotness right now.
Where are we?
Yeah.
We've got some hot news.
Yeah, the Games Workshop's pulling their license from Fantasy Flight.
I haven't seen any confirmation of that whatsoever.
Yeah, I haven't really seen...
I saw wild speculation on EN World, and I saw a bunch of people covering the actual news that Games Workshop is looking to license their games for literally everything except tabletop games.
Yeah.
So I believe that news is a complete falsehood. There are still many, many planned expansions for the 40K LCG.
Which is, I find this really weird because, like, we were literally talking about this on, you know, the Gen Con cast a while ago. And some people were like, so do you think, you know, all of, like, the Rune Wars game is going to be, you know, because they're dumping, Fantasy Flight never really was going to open up into GW's market with minigames. It's not like... Not like GW has a mass combat system fantasy game anymore. They don't. It's gone.
The only website that is pushing that story that Workshop is no longer licensed with Fantasy Flight is EN World. There's no other... Every other person who's covering that story has mentioned nothing about like this like supposed schism. There would have been an announcement. Like, that would have been a thing. Like, there are games that are currently on presale that are under that licensing.
It's just, it's so, you know, funny, it's, like, the rumor, because...
It's just a fucking rumor.
Why would Games Workshop dump that? It's not like there's any sort of overlap. I know Games Workshop has been dipping into the board game market lately. They did Silver Tower and Kill Team and all these other, like, silly board games that they put out that are just to sell the minis, of course. But that's fine. That's understandable. That's been GW's thing the entire time.
Yeah. It might be accurate. Like, they might be opting to not renew the license. That is possible. However, at this time, the only thing that, like, there's a list of things that Games Workshop was looking for its IPs to be licensed as.
Yeah.
And not one of those things was tabletop games.
No, there was video games, like toys.
Video games, toys, I think comics. See if I can find it. I actually have a list. Give me a second, and I'll pull it up. But yeah, so I don't know. That's the only, apparently the only site that I've seen that's talking about it. It is definitely a rumor, and it might. And again, it might be true, but.
And it's just, it's
it seemed like shoddy reporting to me.
And Games Workshop has never done any of like their RPG stuff in house. If I'm not mistaken,
I think way back when the first Wyffrop was published by
that was Hogshead Publishing.
Oh, that's right.
But I don't know if Hogshead was just a division of GW. Yeah, like
Sabretooth Games.
Yeah,
Sabretooth Games, the makers of the UFS fighting system, and then of course the previous 40K card game. Everyone thought it was their own company, but it's actually just a subdivision of Games Workshop.
Yeah.
That is accurate. That might be the case.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it just seems so bizarre to me. And I know everyone was upset. They're like, oh no, Fury of Dracula. I'm like, people play Fury of Dracula?
Oh, dude, Fury of Dracula is popular as shit.
Is it?
Yeah, it's super popular. Okay, here's the official list. This is what they're specifically looking for license deals for. Video games, entertainment, apparel, collectibles, publishing, and toys.
Apparel.
Yeah, close. Like, there's actually, I actually
so
saw.
So I get my sweet Space Marine kicks.
There is a British company that they do like super high end clothes, and they already are producing a Commissar jacket.
Ooh.
It's fucking sick looking, but it's like 800 bones.
Is it like cosplay company?
It's an actual everyday like trench jacket that one could wear as a normal
Ooh.
Human being, but inspired by like it has Oof. Like a. It doesn't look like an actual Commissar jacket. It doesn't look like a Nazi jacket.
Okay.
It's kind of like,
well, no, there's like it was some, never. It was more like Soviet.
Right,
you know,
there's
you
know. there's some angles cut, and there's like some like.
So you look like you're from a Janet Jackson video in the early 90s?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay.
Which is sweet.
I guess.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
I don't know. I always have an issue with trench coats. I just.
Well, yeah, as long as you don't have the trilby and the katana with them, you're fine.
It's just trench coats like part of that whole look.
Yeah.
I think
the trench coat's fallen out of favor.
Well, it has. I mean, you know, that's some people in the 90s really did some bad stuff to, like, put those out of favor, but they made a comeback.
I have no idea what you're referencing.
No, I have no idea what I'm referencing either.
Was it The Matrix? Because that movie was great.
Yes, it was The Matrix.
That movie was sweet.
It was 1998. It was a fun time in America. All of a sudden, the social outcasts started wearing trench coats for some odd reason. No, I wore a trench coat in the 90s because I was like, I'm cool. I'm buying all my stuff at Army Surplus stores. And then I, you know, grew up and I was like, I'm not wearing a trench coat anymore. This is kind of silly. This coat is infinitely too long for my needs.
Well, maybe some people need a long coat.
Yeah, maybe they're into the trenches and they need to protect their whole
body.
They
protect their legs.
Yes, from trench.
From the weather.
From trench foot.
Yeah, they don't want to get that rot.
You don't want to get that rot. No, Nurgle's rot at all. But apparel. I always think of whenever I think of 40K apparel, I think of those ads you see pop up on Facebook.
Oh, with the screen print shirts?
With the screen print shirts, but they're like so badly photoshopped, like where the words are just like hovering over.
It's just a picture. The shirts never look like that.
I know. I'm just, it's just so bad. That's whatever I think of like.
Well, those are all unlicensed.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's what I find funny.
That shit is rampant.
Yeah. Well, that's what I find funny about with GW is that because they've lost so many court cases, it's like, they have lost control over the majority of their IP at the moment. Mm. They can't do anything right now, so they're grasping at straws.
I mean, they still have a super strong IP. Like,
well, yeah, but I mean,
that's what. But now they're actually trying to capitalize because the more, and it makes sense from a business standpoint because the more you use and license your IP, the stronger it gets.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's, you know, because I'll use Nintendo as a good example. Nintendo has a complete stranglehold over their IP because you cannot replicate a Nintendo game. Like,
no,
it doesn't work. Like, you can't do that with GW. I can, if I'm talented enough, I can make Space Marines. Kromlech does it all the time. They make things that look just like fucking Space Marines.
What did they do? Someone just made like a Nintendo game that they shut down. It was like some sort of like anniversary edition or something.
There was Pokemon Uranium.
Maybe it was some Pokemon game
was,
or something.
There was
like
Pokemon
that.
Uranium. There was a that people do unlicensed Nintendo shit all the time. Oh, Metroid. Metroid 2.
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. Metroid 2,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a great game. I played that on Game Boy.
Yeah, fantastic game.
Yeah, it wasn't fantastic. I mean,
for Game Boy,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you gotta put everything into perspective. That was on the brick Game Boy.
There was, like, three great games for Game Boy, not including Tetris, and that was...
Metroid 2 is one of those.
Metroid 2.
Kirby's Dream Land.
Yeah, okay. I'll include Kirby's Dream Land. And The Legend of Zelda, the Dream
Oh, I know. The one with the owl.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it. There was actually a bunch of Zelda games on the, but that's the one everyone played the first one.
Yeah.
And there's some quality titles on the Game Boy, but I mean, it's...
And maybe Wario Land.
I liked Wario Land.
Yeah. Wario Land was decent.
It's the Game Boy, you know, It was a very popular thing, but it's definitely a product of its time. You don't actually see a lot of people trying to hunt down Game Boy games.
Yeah,
you know, I still got
my brick one down in my basement.
If you like, there are some Game Boy games that are worth like some money for sure, but the games are no one wants the actual Game Boys
because
you can
Bart
play
Simpson,
them on the
Escape
SPs.
From Camp Krusty.
Probably not. Most of the licensed games aren't worth dick.
Yeah,
unless it's still a popular license and. The game was like good. That was the dude because so many of those licensed games were just dross, like made by like LJN or whatever. With Workshop shipping out all these licenses to all these mobile games, I assume a bunch of them are terrible. I don't have the time to test all of them. Plus, some of them cost money.
Someone was saying that the Battlefleet Gothic one is really good.
We were talking about it was funny we talked about this yesterday because I had one of the listeners. There was some cross splashing of a dude asking about the licensing. They're like, what about video games? And then also Joe and Steve kind of talk about it tabletop wise. There's a couple games that I did play that are good. There's one where you play as the Night Titan. And like the whole game is you're just a Night Titan. That game is very fun.
Night Titan? Yeah, is it called Night Titan?
It's not. It's called something else. But it's like you just like run around and just fucking kill shit as a Night Titan. It's very fun. The Battlefleet Gothic is a real-time strategy game using the Battlefleet Gothic rules.
Yeah, I've actually heard that one's fairly good.
They have direct ports. There's Warhammer Quest is on there.
Yeah.
So is Talisman.
I've played Talisman on Steam and it's not great.
I mean, it's just Talisman.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like if you like the game Talisman, you will like the video game because it's the same thing.
Hey, you don't have any friends to play Talisman with? Play on Steam.
The new one, the new Space Hulk game where you play as the Deathwing against the Gene Stealers, looks fucking sweet.
I have the Space Hulk one on Steam as well, and that game's all right. I mean, that's another direct port. It's not like anything special. On that one, I haven't seen.
Well, this one's going to be an FPS, so it's going to be a game set in Space Hulk.
I haven't seen the Mordheim one played yet.
I heard that's Mordheim's rules. So,
okay.
So maybe Fantasy Flight is losing the tabletop license. There's nothing concrete, nothing confirmed. I don't think that's likely because the games sell pretty well. And if they are, there's the only thing that would make sense is if Workshop has found someone else to buy that license in a clandestine manner. Because, I mean, their partnership's been going on for quite some time.
A very long time. So, at least over 10 years at this point.
And if there is an end, the only thing I can imagine is because of the... It would be... The only reason would be because of the Asmodee purchase.
You think?
That's the only thing I could think of.
You think GW just doesn't like the Frenchies?
Well, no, I think Asmodee would shut it off. Asmodee owns Fantasy Flight now.
Plus, would Games Workshop be able to go to any other company that's not owned by Asmodee at this point?
They could do Aiello, the people who make King of Tokyo. Yeah. I don't know any other company that has the kind of... the only other real option is Hasbro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they got a contract with Wizards of the Coast for Hasbro, like, that would make sense. Because Hasbro is, giant.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Games Workshop... Who knows what's going on at this point. But
I don't think that it's gone. I think it's people... I think it's the fact that... People are looking at Workshop shopping out their IPs because they're shopping out their IPs because they want to sell it to people. And I think people are like, oh, no, Fantasy Flight. Like, I think it's...
oh, no, yeah. Fantasy Flight.
Yeah, I think people are just, putting their own thing on it. Because, games are going to give a fuck about Rune Wars.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck about Rune Wars. The most damaging game that has come out, again, and, like, this is the thing. This is the argument against anyone who thinks Rune Wars matters in the, like, GW Fantasy Flight paradigm. X-Wing is the game that did the most damage to Workshop.
Which you can play.
By fucking far.
Which you can play at October 15th, 14th, and 15th.
That's true.
And Dragon Ball.
That's true. If you're not playing 40K, you can play X-Wing. Or both.
Yeah, why not? October 15th and 16th. I think it's the 14th.
That's right. 15th and 16th. In St. Charles
at Illinois. Pheasant Run. Yeah. Where there's a Zanies comedy club. I've been there a couple times.
That's the thing. Like, I think people are just like, they see something like that and they're like, oh, it must be that. And it's like, no. Like, damage done already. Damage done and it was done by X-Wing. Like, they didn't even need to make a rank and file. Like, and a rank and file miniatures game is not going to do any damage to any of the games that currently exist.
Yeah, and as I think we said in the last couple podcasts, it's like, it's a cool concept. Will it fly? Who knows?
Maybe. I mean, it's not going to be huge. Rank and file minis games are the niche in the niche in the niche. They're like the most narrow demographic you could possibly, because you have to find the guy who wants to have the big battles.
Yeah.
Of a big size.
Yeah.
Because there's a there's actually more small scale players like 10 mil and 15 mil. There are more of those than there ever were of fantasy, but they're not all playing the same game.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably disagree with you, because I think most people, when they're doing rank and file like historical games, usually play 15 mil. That's generally what I see.
10 or 15
mil. However, I don't think I've seen very few fantasy players on that scale. Almost any time I've ever seen fantasy played, granted, narrow window in Chicagoland community, which is, or used to be,
it's a workshop town.
They all played fantasy,
sure.
And now it's the great division between Ninth Age and Age of Sigmar.
The wide lens is they definitely play less. The rank and file is a very narrow.
But most people who play those 15 and 10 mil games play in their basements. They don't play at the LGS.
There's no tournaments. They don't go to the local game store. Yeah.
God, why aren't there tournaments?
For what?
For that sort of, like, a 10 mil game.
Probably because the rules are loose.
Yeah.
You know, it's a recreational game. It's not supposed to be a competitive. There needs to be a certain level of your rules to do tournaments. Like, you need to have, you know, updated rules, some sort of rules committee, like something.
Because I always think, like, of all historical games that have tournaments, because there's a couple. I mean, Bolt Action is one, and Saga is the other.
I mean, Bolt Action is just 40K with no aliens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just exactly. Yeah. And Saga, and both of them keep their rules fairly updated, fairly quick.
I think a lot of those smaller games are meant to be played over several hours in your basement while throwing some drinks back with your friends,
with your buddies,
yeah,
with your gaming buddies.
Right, I think that's what those are for. They're more like a
they're the
RPG of tabletop games.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, you know that guy that. He has some pretty questionable political views, but you know what? He's the only person in town who will play this game with you. So you kind of cut him some slack.
You give him a pass on the Nazi army.
It's not even that. It's like, man, we're playing a Civil War game, and you're just really into playing the rebels. You know, you're really into playing the Confederates. I'm not saying anything. I'm not reading too deep into this, but you really get into it. The fact that you come in dressed as General Longstreet, that makes it a little crazy. But, no.
Good stuff.
I always have that, because that's one of my major issues. I mean, I always say I'm a very liberal guy, and we've talked about that on the podcast, but it's like, man, so many people that play these games out here are so crazy right-wing. I mean, just like, holding and putting the Confederate flag on the back of your truck. throwing sticks of dynamite into lakes to get your fish. That's like the level that I'm dealing with here. And I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna separate this and talk about little toys with you. I can't handle it. But anyway, so speaking of quasi historical games and racism, I got a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it quasi historical and racist?
Yes, it is.
All right.
I'll show it to you.
Great. I'm really excited. That looks stupid as shit. Why would you get that?
It's for those who can't see, because we're doing this on a podcast. It's Congo by Studio Tomahawk.
We should have just made them guess. We should have just talked about it
without making them guess. No.
Yeah.
It's Congo. It's by the same guys who do Saga. It's based pretty much off the Saga system, which is kind of cool. I just didn't want to do Saga because I... Like, every time I try to get...
You just gotta be a hipster.
Every time I want to get into Saga, though, it's like I get, like, four or five Vikings, and I'm like, oh, these guys are cool. And then it's like I have to paint all of, like, the other Vikings, and they're all wearing, like, potato sacks. And I don't want to paint guys in potato sacks.
Are you sure you don't want to paint guys in potato sacks?
Mm-mm.
Well, this looks really bad. Hey, look, Harambe.
I was good to show you that.
He's
yes.
Right there.
Yes. That's how you
hashtag,
know it's a good...
Hashtag dicks out.
That's how you know it's a good game, because Harambe is right there.
I see.
Oh,
I didn't realize I could play Harambe in this game.
My views are
changing. Is there a gorilla faction? Can I play an army of gorillas?
No, you can't. No, it's basically the Saga.
Is this just a game where you play as white people murdering indigenous Africans?
No, it's a Darkest Africa game, and it's, you know, Darkest Africa games are as old as mini gamings have ever been. You in like Saga, you form a Don't you love that new book smell, by the way?
They all smell the same.
I know, but I love it. I love that new book smell.
Oh, no, it's good. It's just weird that, like, no matter where it's from, just always...
It always smells like the new book.
Always has that smell.
You form a war band. You could either be, like, the great white hunter, you know, in search of his prey. You could be Native Africans. You can be all sort. You could be, like, a sultanate. You know, it's, like, all sorts of silly stuff. I would say it's the saga system with a little more racism in it, but
it's a lot more.
It's a lot more. I do.
This is very squicky.
You know, it's the British. What can I say? They love their colonialism.
I mean, they really do. Hashtag Brexit.
Instead of the dice that Saga uses, use cards. It comes with a card pack that kind of works the same way as the dice. What I do like about it is that the dice system in it, instead of rolling D6s, there's D6, D8, and D10s. So your better figures use D10s, and your lesser units use D6s, and you always hit on a 5. So that's the rule. So it's always hit on 5, no matter what you're doing. But so your guys who are really good are going to be rolling a D10, always hitting on a 5, and the guys who are kind of crappy are always rolling on a D6, have to hit on a 5. That's kind of a cool system. I've been told it's a little bit like Terminator Genesis on that end. Yeah, but
well, you'll probably find about as many people who want to play this game with you as they want to play Terminator Genesis.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. It's Saga is huge right now, and this is like their next. This is Studio Tomahawk's next big push.
Well, so. Huge being very relative.
It's a big tourney. I mean, for a smaller historical game, they put on probably one of the best tournaments at Adepticon, and I've said that before. Like, their tournament always has a great turnout. It looks fantastic. They have great prize support, and it's very well supported in community.
So you're saying they're the kind of guys who'd give you a reach round?
Probably.
Nice.
But once again, it's the Viking stuff. So the guys come in with all the Viking tattoos on and everything. And you're kind of like
8/8 on their hand.
It's like you're kind of like Thor's hammer doesn't quite mean the same thing nowadays. Why can't I just play a game that doesn't have inherent racism in it?
Says the guy who just bought Congo.
I'm conflicted at least. Is that something? What can I say? I don't know. We were talking about the fact that the second most popular game, miniatures game, Warhammer 40K, has commissars in it. It's just like, you know, quasi-Nazis in space. Oh, what is it with our hobby, Steve?
Don't turn around.
Uh-oh.
The commerce stars in town.
I don't know. I'm gonna give it a try. I like the rule set at least.
I don't notice any particular like political ideologies any more so than in any other hobby. There's a mix. There's people who are right and left wing everywhere, and there's the smart people who are in the center.
Yeah, I mean, you don't see any Nazis in Magic. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, you don't see them at the organized play because Wizards organized play is very organized and they will eject you.
Yes.
Like, and if you have, like, you can be, that's the thing. Wizards, like, they don't fuck around. So if you were to, say, have a questionably, you know, white supremacist tattoo, someone would just report you to a judge and they'd eject you from the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, you could get away with a questionably white supremacist tattoo at a workshop tournament. As long as it's questionable.
As
long as it's questionable. I don't think.
No. This is the Imperial Aquila.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get away with like a straight up one, but I think you could get away with a questionable one. At a Magic tournament, no way.
I want to get a pro Brexit tattoo. That's what I want to get.
It should be a dude in
No, I want to get. Like,
here's what it should be. It should be a dude in a Union Jack shirt, busting through a wall, saying "Oh yeah," and he's it kind of like does like a panel thing, and the next panel is him putting up a giant wall that just says "Oh yeah."
Oh no, I was thinking more of getting a like one of those.
Just get Nigel Farage. Just get his face. That's the most pro-Brexit tattoo you can have.
If I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna get Boris Johnson. That's
okay.
What I'm
then get. You should do Bojo. You should get him in the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure costume, but you make it Boris Johnson and just have Bojo's Bizarre Adventure.
Bojo's Bizarre Adventure. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So.
But I mean, it's the best meme.
I didn't think it was a thing until you explained to me that it was a thing.
It's
I thought it was just something that was made up.
Oh, it's huge.
No, but I still think it's made up.
But it's the best meme with Boris Johnson. Like, it's so fucking perfect. Like, Bojo's Bizarre Adventure, it's flawless.
It's flawless.
There's no better.
Yeah. I'll take your word for it. So just what other gaming news do we got going on?
I got a thing here.
You got a thing?
Yeah, from Twitter.
From Twitter?
Yeah, this is from a guy.
A guy. Hashtag a guy.
He has a couple things here. The first, talk about heavy gear. If you have any experience playing it, gonna try and figure out the rules on Sunday with a friend. Well, good luck. You probably won't be able to figure them out. The last time I played Heavy Gear, it was terrible.
Do you have a TI-85? Because you're going to need to figure out logarithmics to figure out if you hit or not.
Yes. Quadratic formula. Get brushed up on it. You might need to know a little bit of quantum theory.
Negative B plus or minus the square root of 4.
And I hope you've brushed up on your physics.
Yeah.
I played a demo of it at Gen Con several years ago. I hated it. I couldn't believe how bad the demo was.
Yeah.
It was slow, awful. Like, it's a game, like, it should be easy bait to get me to, like, I'm an idiot weeboo who loves fucking mecha. Like, I should be, like, clearly, easily baited into buying that game. And I left going, like, I'm never gonna buy that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to Battletech in a lot of respects. I mean, it takes a lot of its cues from Battletech, of course.
Right.
But Battletech, you know, I've had a lot of people lately who've explained, like, this has happened, like, two or three times in the last two or three months where people have made a very solid argument that Battletech is not a miniatures game. It's a board game.
Yeah.
That just happens to be very, very expandable, but it's played on a table. It's played on a board.
It's also super complicated.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you would think if you're going to make a game that takes some cues from Battletech, you would make it less complicated, not more.
Yeah, and this is like, this is just Heavy Gear is Battletech.
Battletech plus.
Well, you take away the mat. Is what it is, and the models are cool.
Yeah,
and like, and every
sweet.
Time you want to look at it, you're like, "Oh man, those
heavy
gear
those mechs are fucking
sweet."
Sweet.
Yeah, and they're a little complicated to put together, but that's because they're poseable, and you could do a lot of cool stuff with it.
They're great looking models.
Yeah, it's like you want to do stuff with it, and you're like, "Oh great," but then again, it's like, I want this to be super easy. So then you go see a game like Robotech, and you're like, "Oh, this game is super quick and easy and fun. Oh, this is great." Wait. How many pieces are each of these models? I want a customizable, but not this.
Yeah, I would say get the Heavy Gear minis and use them to play a different game.
Yeah, that GKR Heavy Hitters is looking interesting.
And to be fair, this was years ago. Heavy Gear might have had new additions since then, but I remember it was like it took forever. Everything missed. And it was like you needed crazy high numbers and nothing died. It was like the least action in a minis game possible.
But that's part of the thing, you know, with selling a game. And GW perfected this is the demo game. Like, how do you get people to want to play a game? You give them a fantastic demo game where they win in the end. Or even if, like, maybe they botch every roll out there, they still feel great after playing it.
Right.
And then you want to keep playing the game. That's how it works. And then once they buy into the game, then you hit them with, no. That's not how this game is played. We're going to show you how to really play this game this time, now that you've invested in the demo, in the starter set. And God bless them. They can't do it. At least the one thing I will say about Heavy Gear is they do, like, all of their stuff looks immaculate when it's out on the table. They do a fantastic job of putting it out there. Go ahead with it if you want.
Yeah, give it a go. I mean, maybe the rules are better than Blue River 4.
Touch back to Steve. Let him know how
Me know. Let me know on the Twitter. He also gave out another one. This is the easiest, most slam dunk question I've ever been asked. What would be a good RPG system to play a fantasy pirate theme with?
Yarr!
7C. 7C.
Not brand close. New, just came out.
Yep, 7C. Not close. Play 7C if you want to add some more fantasy elements. If there aren't enough for you in the game, just add some fucking fantasy elements. Call some dudes orcs instead of humans.
Yeah.
Done. Wait, hang on. Had to dust my hands off.
And actually, what's really
cool... He's on fire!
And for some odd reason, there's a huge pirate resurgence right now. Like, people are all about pirates again. They come and go. Like, pirate games come and go every, like, 5 or 6 years. They're on a cycle.
Yeah, there's the big one, Seafall, coming up.
Yeah.
Seafall is actually pretty cool. It's a post-apocalyptic pirate game.
Yeah. It's, for some odd reason, pirates are coming back now. There's that Rum and Bones, of course, if you want to get a lot of cheap minis.
Yeah.
Rum and Bones is a good place to go.
And they got the Davy Jones things going.
Yeah, Rum and Bones, though, it's a little high of a... I guess it'd be okay for RPGs, but it's like a 32 mil, but it's a big 32 mil.
I mean, bigger scales will work for RPGs.
Yeah. I've always had problems with RPGs with boats, though. Boats are, I always want, boats don't work in RPGs. They don't work in minis games, at least in 28 mil. You got to get, like, if you want to use boats, you got to use, like, the 1,500th scale or whatever it is.
Boats are rough. Like, boats are best in, like, the background of your game. Yeah. They can work in RPGs, but...
That Sails of Glory game, though, was pretty good, which is...
That's the big boat battle game, right?
Yeah. That was they did a Kickstarter for it. All the boats looked really great, and the rules were fun. We played it a couple times. I do not... I have no problems with it. It's not something that I would probably be like want to play on a regular basis. It's right. Not like where I'm like, hey, let's bust out Sails of Glory, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you actually could do a pretty decent 28 mil boat game, but you'd need to be using some. I think actually like Age of Sigmar would be best for it. Honestly, humorously enough, I think Age of Sigmar would work best with a boat game because it's like it's loose.
Well, every time GW wants to do a boat game, they always bust out the old ass boat rules from General's Compendium. Which are older. Those rules are older than General's Compendium. But it's always like where they have like a wind dial. And all. I'm like, I don't want to use wind dials and all this stuff. I just want to roll. I want to sail my boat up. I want to shoot my cannons. I want to get close. And I want to do a boarding action.
Yeah, I think the best use of them would be to do them with all sailboats that don't have weapons. Just to make it a very interesting board to move around in. Like where you have like... so much negative space and you have guys like you have to manage moving your troops through very narrow corridors. I think that would make it it's there to make it interesting.
And as we all know, Steve's favorite alcohol while gaming is rum.
That's true. And you drank a lot of that Kraken.
Yes, you drank a lot of that Kraken that day. The sea was angry that day, my friends. Like an old man trying to send soup back in a deli.
Look straight into the blowhole.
I looked at the eye of the massive fish, mammal, whatever.
Marine biologist.
Does anybody here a marine biologist?
That's a great
line. Boat games are just incredibly difficult to do, but whatever.
It's hard to make them fun.
It's hard to do in 28 mil. But, Rum and Bones probably would work very well, but it's MOBA style. So.
Yeah, Rum and Bones is like you have a ship and there's another ship directly across from yours. From
it, yeah. And it's just your guys running around from ship to ship.
Yeah, they're running back and forth.
Yeah. As I say, MOBA style.
Yep.
Is that so I think, yes. 7C, brand new. And actually, if you want to, you could track down the old 7C miniatures. Those are pretty easy to find.
Play 7C.
I think AEG put them out.
Probably.
Yes. Does he have anything else?
That is it.
That is it. What about gaming news? Do we have any new news going on?
Nothing that is like actual news. There's that speculation, of course, about the GW thing, which is obviously, my feelings on that. I don't think it's true.
At least
not at this time. New Magic set looks really good. Kaladesh, that is looking quite strong. They spoiled a bunch of cards. There's a new they actually are debuting a couple new configurations. So Magic for a long time has been boosters, intros, and fat packs. Fat packs being 9 booster packs and like some random like lands and et cetera. Intros being really shitty starter decks to learn how to play the game. Intros have always been bad. They changed the name of fat packs to bundles because they decided that fat pack was too nondescript of a name. And they settled on the much more descriptive bundle, which I thought was humorous. But the only difference is it's a slightly more expensive MSRP, and it now contains 10 packs instead of 9. That's the only real difference from what I've seen. The box is supposedly better as well, so it's a little bit better of a storage box. But we'll see, if that's accurate. And then the intro decks have been replaced by the much more exciting and much more sensical Planeswalker decks. And what the Planeswalker decks are going to be is they're going to be themed after a particular Planeswalker who is included in the deck, hence the name Planeswalker deck. And what they are going to be is they're going to be a not tournament level Planeswalker. So, example, the Chandra spoiled from the set is insane. Like, the people are talking it's probably going to be pre-selling for possibly more than $60 already.
Wow.
And it was spoiled yesterday. And, like, the hype is fucking real. Like, it is, people are losing their minds about how powerful it is. So people are like, wow. It costs 4 mana. It's very strong. It has 4 abilities. Very powerful. The Chandra in the Planeswalker deck costs 6 mana and is very dirtly and has 3 abilities. So it's nothing special. But... it's perfect. It, like, for the actual intended use of what an intro deck is to get people into the game, It's perfect for that. And it's also got the secondary use of being good in casual formats, because like in Commander, which is the most popular casual format, all the Planeswalkers are good. Doesn't matter. Like, if it's a Planeswalker, it is playable in Commander. So, like, if I'm a Commander player, I can grab one of those Planeswalker decks and go, bam, I've got a new Planeswalker to add to my deck. And you only need one, so it's perfect. So I think it's a much better... I know it is a much better idea to do Planeswalker decks than intros, for sure. Because the intros were always just garbage. It was like, it was a garbage foil rare and a garbage deck.
It was
just
garbo.
Yeah, total worthless. So that's pretty big. Then, other than that, there's the Crow board game that's coming out.
I actually had an RPG question for you, and I wanted to talk about...
There's huge news that's going to affect the gaming market in some way. There's a Korean shipping company that went bankrupt.
Oh, yeah, I saw about that. You posted something about that.
Yeah, so they currently have 80 ships that are stranded at sea from the company. Yeah, so that's going to be bad. It is the 9th or 7th largest container shipping company in the world. There are many geek products, so that's games, collectibles, comics, graphic novels, toys. Many of them could be affected by this, especially because container shipping prices from China to the U.S. rose 50% in a single day last week because of this. So everything is going to get more expensive. In the hobby sector. So that's grim news. It's likely things are going to be much more pricey, at least for a little while until the market settles. But this is a huge upset.
How are you going to get your Gundams?
Not just Gundam.
Are you going to get your Gundams,
you know,
Steve?
You know everything's made in China, right? You know everything is. And my Gundams will be easy to get because I import them from Japan. I just import them directly, so I don't need to worry. I import them from the country they're manufactured in. Yeah, we're good. But for anyone who's got, you know, children and they want to buy them toys or, you know, comic books or, you know, pretty much everything that's manufactured in China, you're gonna pay more for it. So
my damn daughter and those Zoom Zooms.
Well, get ready to get wrecked by a Zoom Zoom.
The Zoom Zooms, the little...
Oh, the stack. Zoom Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom Zoom.
Yeah. I thought you said Zoom Zoom.
No.
Yeah, I know the Zoom Zoom.
Yeah, we talked about it on the podcast. It's like she's just obsessed with them. Obsessed with them lately. And I'm like, these things are so stupid.
There's a really funny crossover, obviously, because Disney owns Tsum Tsum and Marvel. Yeah. There's a great Marvel-Disney Tsum Tsum crossover comic, and the opening cover is hilarious, or the front panel cover is hilarious. It's like, it's regular Spider-Man, like, jumping up in the air, and there's, like, Iron Man, and then there's a tiny little Tsum Tsum Spider-Man jumping, and there's a Tsum Tsum Venom, like, about to fight him. It's the silliest, it just, like, I saw it, it just cracked me up. I was like, that's the stupidest thing. It's really funny.
Well, she wanted to get one, and she got Thanos. I'm like, nice. What is my daughter gonna do with Thanos?
Obviously get the Infinity Gauntlet and conquer the fucking universe.
It did come with the Infinity Gauntlet.
See?
Yeah.
So you answered your own question.
I have an RPG question for you.
All right,
well, actually, how about before that, I wanted to talk about Mysterium. Have you played Mysterium yet?
I have not played Mysterium yet. I know it's great. Everyone says it's great.
It is. This game is the new hotness.
It's very hot. It's very hot. That and Codenames, a couple of, but yeah, it's a, you know, super popular. If you haven't played Mysterium, do yourself a favor and play it. A lot of people really like it. It's a game where you perform a seance to solve a murder, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so The best thing is that one player is kind of the ghost. He's the DM. He's not allowed to speak at all during the thing. So if you have that one ass in your group who just won't shut up, make him the ghost.
Or they'll just talk and ruin it.
But you could be like, Barry, knock it off. I don't know any actual berries. So, but yeah, and then they hand out cards every turn to kind of like give clues, but the cards are very... you could read a lot into it. Mm-hmm. So, like, there'll be, like, a tree, and the one of the suspects could be, like, a woodworker, and you could be like, oh, it's this guy because...
He's a woodsman.
He works with wood, and they're like, well, what about this woman? She's obsessed with squirrels. Squirrels live in trees. I think it's this woman. There's a lot of that stuff going. Not exactly that, but... I'm looking at picking it up for Halloween, for my Halloween game and night.
I would recommend it for that.
Yeah, I think that would work. Maybe like one or two rounds of that would be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But actually, my RPG question that I have for you.
I'm ready.
All right. So as a DM, how do you feel about running RPGs in a real world environment of like places that people know?
You mean like setting them there? So like if I'm like, we're going to set this in Chicago, like the city of Chicago.
The city of Chicago.
I think it's okay. I don't have a problem with it, but like I find a lot of times like those games end up being boring because like I mean I don't know, when I do RPGs like I want the fantastical, you know, I want games about wizards and fucking sorcerers.
Well, I mean, like you could do
fighters
that.
And barbarians,
you could do that with you could, I mean, Werewolf has a lot of stuff that happens in the real world.
Yeah, I mean the White Wolf games are the exception to the rule, but I mean those games are all, they're not really like, I hate to say this, but they're not very good RPGs. They're mostly just like a way to be emo with your friends and like I don't know. Because so much of those games are about like just like weird political intrigue. I don't know. There's something about setting any RPG in the modern time, period, let alone a familiar setting to you, that kind of removes a lot of the, you know, it's like, what are you going to do as your werewolf in Chicago? Like, I'm going to do werewolf things. It seems like it narrows the game rather than giving you, you know, RPGs are supposed to be open and like, you know, I want to do lots of stuff. It's supposed to go narrow the game. Now, that's not to say that it's not good for one shots. I think for one shots, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do a zombie outbreak in Chicago.
Well, that's like, because like last year on Halloween, I ran the zombie game. I had to take place in the western suburbs, you know, like this area that all my gamers were very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
It was good, but I think it lent itself a little too much to metagaming. Like, they're like, oh, well, I know that I can do this here, and which is fun because it takes out a lot of that, like, well, I searched the office, and because they know, like, oh, well, I know this is there.
Yeah.
Because in the real world, that's there.
Yeah, I guess the best thing you can do is you can have, you could set it in contemporary times, but not in a location that everyone knows. So something like, say, so you're from Chicago, Chicagoland area, say do it in New York. You know, it's not a city that people know. They probably don't know the streets. They don't, you know, you can like the neighborhoods, like, you know, the Bronx and Harlem, you know that, but it's like a vague, you know, idea of it. You don't actually know Harlem. So, you know, that would be a good idea. Cause then you have like, you know, everyone's kind of got a feel for it. But I mean, what's the purpose of setting it in? There needs to be a very specific reason to set it in like a real world setting that people know.
Well, I mean, okay, so for example, what I'm planning on doing this Halloween, and the only person who probably experience this is Pat, but Pat might be in Uzbekistan for all I know, fixing robots during Halloween. So if you're listening, Pat, this might be spoiled a little bit for you if you come over to play. But if you know you're in Uzbekistan, I'm sorry as well, and enjoy the Uzbekistanis. So I'm doing a Ghostbusters game for Halloween. I'm going to be using the end of the world engine just because it's easy. It's really great for one shots, but I'm going to have it take place at the Field Museum in Chicago.
Sounds sweet.
Yeah. So I figure it's,
you're going to get the Field Museum map, right?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I want to
fucking love the Field Museum.
You know, it's not as great as I remember it to be.
I mean, it's not as good as, nothing's as good as when you're a kid. Have you been to the Science Museum, the Museum of Science Industry lately?
Oh, yeah. I got a membership.
The museum blows.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Kids love it.
Yes, exactly. You like museums more when you're a kid.
Not every kid likes museums.
Well, okay. Brainy wiener kids like museums.
Yeah.
I was a brainy wiener kid.
I mean, the Museum of Science and Industry has all of the same stuff they had when we were kids. I mean, like, what's gone?
It's not that it's gone. It's just like when you get older, you're like, oh. Like, perfect example. I watched The NeverEnding Story in theaters not too long ago.
Turn around.
That movie is fucking awful.
Tell me what you see.
That is a terrible movie. I could not believe how bad that movie was, but did have good puppets.
It did have great puppets.
But like,
I believe that was a German movie as
it,
well.
It was. Yeah. Yes, it was the most expensive German movie ever made. It was 60 million marks, which by that time was that not only was the most expensive German movie ever made, it was actually one of the most expensive movies ever made, even counting Hollywood. It was a huge risk, and I guess the writer of the book tried to get the production shut down. And because they changed the ending, or they added when he comes back after the bullies on Valcor, that's made up. That's they added that to the movie.
Yeah,
that was completely added
because it doesn't make any sense in the movie. Well, not a lot of stuff in the movie makes sense.
And the author was like, no, Because the author's like, this is all supposed to be made up in his head. Like, you guys are pulling this out. You're making it a Disney movie. And they're like, well, yeah, we want to make it a Disney movie.
Yeah, we...
Yeah. And so he tried to block it, and the German government was like, no.
No.
They're like, this is a $60 million budget. Like,
Whoa. The West German government.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like, this is a $60 million budget. You would do massive damage to our economy if you got this film blocked, so we're going to tell you no.
And you're probably making money hand over fist because
That's the thing. He was already paid.
Yeah.
Because this is production. You know, like, they're at the point where they're talking about the ending of the movie, and he's trying to block, you know, the release, basically.
Yeah.
You know, money spent. Yeah. So it's just funny.
Strong hands.
They look like big, strong hands, don't they? I like Moralist still. Moralist still really good. Not that it matters, but yeah.
No one cared about me till I put on this mask.
If I take the mask off, will she die? So I think it's just a case of, like, when you remember things differently.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I remember loving the Museum of Science and Industry. I always thought it was the coolest. And I recently went to the Field Museum, and I was like, wow, this museum is way better than I remember. And then I also recently went to the Science and Industry Museum, and I was like, this museum is way worse than I remember.
The weird thing with the Field Museum, and it's a natural history museum, in case, for those who don't know, we're talking about it. It's a natural history museum, and it's just like, it's really depressing to me, like, walking through all of, like, these, like, rows and rows of animals that are stuffed. I mean, it's kind of cool because it's like, this is history. These animals have been here for hundreds of years.
Extinct ones?
Yeah. Or I should say hundreds. Like, decades. These
There's
things
plenty have, of extinct ones in
yeah,
there.
Yeah. But these things have been here for at least 100 years in some of these places,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. And they're, like, they're very well done. You get to see, like, the stuffed lions from the movie Ghosts of the Darkness, the man-eaters of Savo. You're like, oh, that's really cool. But at the same time, it's just like, you're just like, oh, well, this is kind of depressing.
To be fair, they were going to be dead by
they would,
now.
Yeah,
definitely would be dead by now.
It's like that Simpsons where Marge sees the hang in there, buddy, with the cat hanging from the tree. And they're like, copyright 1976.
Yeah.
Hang in there or not, this cat's been dead a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's
kind of like that. I love the mini, and I like the miniature stuff they got there. I don't know, it's just a cool museum.
They have a lot of cool stuff. Like, they have a lot of
the dinosaurs are sweet.
Yeah, the dinosaurs.
They actually did a lot. There was a lot more dinosaur stuff there than I remembered.
Yeah, they redid the dinosaur section, yeah. and the kind of like large, like, extinct mammal section,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
the
Egyptian
cool.
stuff's cool.
Yeah, I always like the Egyptian wing because I think that they do that pretty well, but it's still kind of eh. But anyway, it's a perfect place to put, like, a Ghostbusters setting
sure.
for an RPG, right? So, I mean,
Night at the Museum.
Yeah.
Get Ben Stiller in there.
Bueller.
That's Ben Stein.
Oh, Ben Stiller. Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Ben Stiller is, what do you think I didn't know what a U-Googly was?
Oh, Dad, I got the black lung. Pops, I got the black lung.
You know what you should do? You should, whatever you're doing in the story, have one room, if they discover it, that's got, like, paintings in it, and yeah. make one of the paintings Vigo. Just describe it. Don't say it's Vigo. Uh-huh. Just describe it, and if they fuck with it, have them fight Vigo.
I don't want to have them, like, I'm not going to make it too crazy.
You're not going to have them battle with Vigo,
no.
the master of evil? He's going to battle your boys. That's not legal.
The Scourge of Moldavia?
He ruled on a throne of pain or whatever.
Death is but a window.
Yeah, he's just mad because he got killed by John McClane in Die Hard.
He did get killed by John McClane. Was it Die Hard?
First Die Hard.
Yeah.
He's totally one of the German terrorists, and he gets wasted by John McClane.
Well,
and then he became Vigo.
Yeah.
You know, it all worked out for him in the end.
I mean, John McClane. Why does bad stuff always happen to John McClane on Christmas?
Not the third movie.
Not the third one. No, it was summer.
Actually,
it's summer because they start off with
it was just
hot time, summer in the city.
It was just the first and the second one at Christmas. None of the other ones were at the holidays.
Yeah. The fourth one, the Live Free or Die Hard, terrible. The fifth one, the one where he's, like, in Russia.
Where he goes to Russia?
That one wasn't bad.
I like that
one. It was all right.
That was the one that everyone hated on the most. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, that one, it wasn't great, but it once again reaffirmed the people.
Die Hard hasn't been great since Die Hard 1. It's the only one of those movies that's really great.
I don't know.
Oh, actually, I take that back. Vengeance is really good with Jeremy Irons.
A lot of people love Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Vengeance is a really good movie. I take that back.
Surprisingly, a lot of women really love Die Hard with a Vengeance. I don't know why, but you could ask a lot of people, and like a lot of a lot of girls, and they'll say, I really like Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Maybe because Sam Jackson and Jeremy Irons are sweet? I don't know.
Jeremy Irons.
I take that back, because Vengeance is really cool because it's so different. Like, I think the reason Die Hard 2 fails as a movie is not that it's... Die Hard 2 is not a terrible movie. It's really not. The problem is Die Hard 2 is so similar to the first movie. It's like, it's not bringing anything new to the table. Die Hard with a Vengeance is cool because it's like... Oh, well, we're gonna do something completely. It's like for your game, your Ghostbusters game, you could do one instead of the Field Museum. It's like an enclosed space. You know, you're here. If you do a sequel the next Halloween and you have them like busting around the city, that's the difference.
Yeah, that's kind of like what
makes it cooler.
Yeah,
it gives you something different.
To be fair with Die Hard though, Die Hard 1, 2, 3, and 4 were not written as Die Hard movies. The only movie that was written as a Die Hard movie was Die Hard 5.
The first one was based on a novel.
Yeah. I didn't even notice Cole changed her hair.
Yeah, it's for the convention.
Wearing it for like 10 hours.
Yeah. For the Star Trek. Are you going as an Andorian? No.
That'd be fucking sick though.
It's a cool looking Andorian look.
I don't have the.
Yeah, you need the antennae.
Yeah. It's true. But the. Yeah, well, Die Hard...
I finished Enterprise, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Fuck, man, that show got great before
Toward
it ended.
The end, right?
So mad.
Once they get past the nonsense of the Temporal War...
I was so mad.
And then they get into, like, all of, like, the Andorian conflict and everything, you're like, God damn, this got good.
Yeah, got real good. And the episode where they have the, like, they just do cold open, hashtag spoiler for Star Trek Enterprise if you don't want to hear it, where they just do the cold open and it's totally different. It's, like, war and there's, like, machine guns and planes and the music, like...
The
fuck is this?
Because
it's the mirror.
Yeah.
And it opens up with the final scene in First Contact where Zefram Cochran pulls out a fucking shotgun and kills the Vulcans. I was like, that's fucking awesome. Yeah. So I was really like, I was upset when the episode was, I was like, fuck.
Well, the problem is what they did in season 4, they should have done in season like 2 and just completely wiped out all that temporal Cold War stuff because it was awful. It was an awful, awful story arc that just killed that show. It went on too long. It didn't make any sense. It did no nostalgia factor to keep people who were interested in Star Trek watching it. They arced it too much. They tried to make it like Battlestar Galactica. It was terrible. I blame Battlestar Galactica for a lot of problems with TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Actually, the majority of it's X-Files' fault, but I can't be mad at X-Files.
Can't stay mad at X-Files.
No, I can't. I can't stay mad at Sexy Agent Mulder.
It's got Mulder.
Sexy Agent Mulder. Yeah, but so I'm thinking like, what I'd like to do is I would like to set this in the real world. And I think doing it in Chicago at the Field Museum is just familiar enough where I don't have to spend a lot of work front loading information as the DM.
Mm-hmm.
So that my players will know enough about like, this is the Field Museum. I don't have to explain that, like, this is a museum of natural history founded by Stanley Field and blah, 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 you know?
I think it's a good idea if you want your world to matter and not also simultaneously not be important. So that's a weird statement, but it's because like in D&D, if you're playing in Greyhawk, say, nobody gives a fuck about Greyhawk. Nobody knows shit about Greyhawk. Nobody cares about this fucking village's storyline. They want to go and like wreck shit.
They want to be murder hobos.
Right. They want to be murder hobos. That's what they want to do. They're playing D&D. So, you know, nobody fucking cares. So there's the background is irrelevant in D&D. It's completely irrelevant. But again, people don't even have a like any sort of handhold on the background. They're just like, is there a blacksmith? And you're like, yeah, there's a blacksmith. They're, okay, great.
It's a medieval village. Of course,
right,
there's a blacksmith.
Yeah, there's a blacksmith. And like, oh, great. How about a farmer's market? Yeah, there's a farmer right there. Great. You know, there's no real like weight of the world. It's just a fantasy world. It's generic. But when you're talking like the real world, Field Museum, I immediately think of the field. Like, I think I can see the Field Museum in my head.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what, you know, like what that looks like, the scope, the scale, how many floors there are. Like, I know that. So having that information, if you're making the setting a character, using a familiar setting is much better than using one that people aren't familiar with. But that doesn't necessarily have to be fictional or nonfictional. Like, if you're playing a Lord of the Rings game with a bunch of people who are super into Lord of the Rings and know a lot about Middle Earth, then the setting can be as much of a character as, Chicago, yeah. If people live in Chicago.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, too, is, like, I know my players have been to the Field Museum, and they probably haven't spent a lot of time there, but that's perfect for a game like Ghostbusters, because Ghostbusters, the guys have to be blue-collar. They're not, like, people who go to the museum on a regular basis. They're not, like, people who have the layout of the museum memorized.
Maybe one of them does.
Maybe one. But, I mean, like, it's
Egon.
There's something fun to be said about having it as a blue-collar experience where you're just like, this is a job. Where's the job at? It's at the Field Museum. All right. You know, it's not like, you know, spend a lot of time there.
Print is dead.
Yeah. I was actually contemplating having it take place at the Oriental Institute in Chicago. Have I ever talked about it on the cast before?
Never been.
Oriental Institute in Chicago is for nerds, like history nerds, it's amazing. For anyone else, it is the most driest, boring place on the planet.
Sounds like I would not dig it.
You walk in there, and it's all like, it's all Middle Eastern stuff. So it's like Sumeria, Babylon, Persia, ancient Egypt. And it's all like in like how you would imagine Indiana Jones's museum would be. Like Marcus Brody's museum. Yeah. You walk in there and it's like it's all just everything's on display. There's a little description next to it. But they have like if you dig into it, though, such cool stuff. Like they have statues of Pazuzu from
nice.
Yeah, exactly. Like
Pazuzu.
You get it. No one else would get it, though.
Oh.
And they have, like, the big Lamassu statue.
That's fucking sweet.
It's gigantic. And, like, if you're...
Hey, that sounds cool.
I know.
You buried the lead.
But I'm burying it because, like, you would go there and be like, oh, this is interesting. This is fantastic. They have mummies and everything else.
Okay, so it's ancient history.
Yeah, ancient
okay.
history.
Okay, see, I like ancient history. I don't like contemporary history.
Well, that's what it's
that
called.
That goes for World War I, Civil War, Revolutionary War. Basically, if there's guns, I'm not really interested.
Yeah. Well, the problem is it's called the Oriental Institute, which goes back to the old-ass term of Oriental, meaning...
Just meaning, like, East. Yeah, not, the Orient. That's what it is, the Orient.
It's not like Orient is in colonialism, like...
That's one of my favorite gags from The Tick, the original one with Patrick Warburton, where...
The original one's the cartoon, sir.
It's the original live action, because there's a new live action now with guy from Shaun of the Dead.
We reviewed it on Comic Book Logic.
I haven't seen it yet. I heard it was...
It's pretty
yeah the but it's the lady they're at a Chinese restaurant and the lady brings him a plate and there's fortune cookies on and he's like oh exotic treats from the Orient and he just starts eating them and he's like nuh, and he pulls the fucking note out and he's like oh, I've got a message from my teeth and I was like that's great so like that you know I was like why did this show get canceled
because it was probably very expensive. No one watched it.
Yeah.
And it was on Fox.
It was on Fox, the most dangerous network to be on.
But, yeah, so it's like you go there and they have all this, like, great ancient history stuff. And, like, look, guys, a good chunk of the people who listen to this podcast are not in the United States. We don't have a very in-depth history here.
What are you talking about? We got 200 years. 200 years. 200 years. We're number one. 200 years.
Getting close to 250, sir. I don't like.
Wait, let me reiterate that.
Like, we don't have castles. Like, we can't. Like, I like watching Antiques Roadshow on the BBC where they're like, I found this sword in my attic. And the guy's like, oh, this is the sword of Charlemagne. You know,
this was literally distributed to the king from a woman in a pond.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, that's great. I could sell it for tea money. And then they're like, you'll get £5,000 for it. And we're like, oh, that's great. And then you go to watch Antiques Roadshow in America, and they're like, I got this blanket. It's from 1975. How much is it worth?
I think that's the reason so many Americans are dickheads with America boners, is because we don't have a real history.
Well, we have a history. It's just not
a real history.
It's not an in-depth history.
Hashtag real.
Hashtag real.
Like, we don't have a
Hashtag
real
woke.
History. We have a fucking garbo history. Sorry about that. We have a garbo history that's not very long and not very in-depth.
Well, yeah. It's just we just haven't developed a history yet. But that's what I'm saying is, like, so for us to be able to experience a place where we get to see, like, mummies and, like, stuff from Babylon, it's kind of cool because we don't get that here.
Do they have Gilgamesh?
They do have stuff on Gilgamesh there.
Yeah. Gilgamesh is the fucking nut.
I think they have a piece of the original Gilgamesh tablet, like, one of the ones that they found. Because...
Sick.
And people on the podcast are going to be like, why are they talking about this stuff on a gaming podcast? It's because me and Steve geek out about this stuff. Is that the guy who founded the museum actually went to my alma mater college And he was the one, he was like one of those guys who went over to ancient, you know, Mesopotamia and stole a bunch of crap and brought it back to America.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you get a lot of really cool stuff there.
It's actually one of my favorite animes called Fate Stay Night, and it's historical. Long story short, it's Pokemon, but they're historical figures.
Yeah.
And each person's a wizard, and they have a chosen historical figure to
Teddy
fight with
Roosevelt,
them.
I choose you.
Basically. Yeah. But they have one historical figure, and Gilgamesh is one of them. And all of the historical figures have things they call... what do they call it? It's a divine... It's like a divine aspect or whatever. And each hero has X number of them based on their legend. So basically the more larger in life their legend, the more ridiculous they are as like resurrected to fight in this war for the Holy Grail. So Hercules, who's resurrected as the Berserker, one of his aspects is the nine trials. So he has to be killed nine times. That's one of his abilities. Like, he gets stabbed, and they're like, oh, he's totally dead. Haha, I've won the fight. And then he beats the shit out of the person who stabbed him. And it's like, how is he still alive? It's like, oh, you have to kill him nine times. Like, he just comes back to life. That's one of his powers. And so King Arthur has Excalibur and the hilt. So it's things that they were buried with, or things about them. And at one point, one of the characters is, like, very mysterious. You don't know who it is. And he's kind of just, like, outside of the competition, he's not really fighting, and then you find out that it's Gilgamesh, and he unveils his power, which is called the Gates of Babylon. And the Gates of Babylon is a million billion portals, noble phantasm, that's what they're called, noble phantasm. So like the Excalibur is a noble phantasm. So this portal opens up, many portals open up behind him, and all of these like hilts and blades come out of the portals. And they're all noble phantasms. So basically, King Arthur has Excalibur. Gilgamesh has 1,000 Excaliburs because he had all of the fucking treasure. He had all of the treasure abilities. So I thought that was one of the coolest things. I was like, fucking Gilgamesh is a goddamn badass. So it's cool because like he is the hero that, you know, everything is based off of. He's the first epic. He's the first legend. So he's the most powerful of all of the fight. Like, not even close.
I'll take your word for it.
It's Steve. Fucking sweet. Alexander the Great's in it. He's fucking badass. His abilities, he makes a reality bubble, and he calls forth other heroes to help him fight.
Alexander the Great's power is he fights well for 15 minutes, and then he dies. I
thought it was relevant.
Yeah. Ultramarine.
Oh. Ultra!
Ultra!
That's your battle cry.
Marnius Cool Guy.
That's Marnius Cool Guy!
But also, what they do have there at the museum, they have a gigantic, like, stone head of a bull from, like, the Minoans. And it's, like, a 7-8-ton bull head that's just massive.
Sick.
It's pretty cool.
That's sweet.
I wanted to set the game there, but I was like, eh, it might be a little too dry for my players. Like...
Also not as familiar.
Yeah, and so, like, the Field Museum, like, people know there's a giant T-Rex skeleton. Is that T-Rex skeleton going to come to life? Maybe, you know? Is the, are the big elephants going to come to life? Maybe. You know, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, mummies. Yeah.
It could be the mummies. You never know. There's a lot that could happen in there and a lot of fun stuff that's Ghostbuster-wise.
Plus, you can do animals, you know, animal possession.
Yeah, you
can
do
stuff.
Animal possession.
You can have them fucking attacked by a walrus. They don't like that.
You could do like the Native American stuff up like with totem poles and like spirit warriors and crap. Like, there's a lot of crap that you could do.
You could have one of the Moldoramas be haunted.
Moldoramas.
I fucking love Moldoramas.
Oh, the haunted. Oh God, it's so hot.
It's so hot. It smells really good though.
It's like it's not really that hot. It's just hot enough that it kind of singed my hands.
Ouch.
This is just really uncomfortable, guys.
Ow, oh, it's a little robot. It's cool.
Do they have Moldoramas in other cities?
Yeah, it's all around the U.S.
Because I know it's like a big deal in Chicago to get all the Moldoramas.
I have a fuck ton of Moldoramas. I fucking love Moldorama.
I've maybe bought my daughter one or two of them.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of them. I always liked them when I was a kid.
They switch them out. They do limited edition ones.
They do. I actually have several of the limited edition ones. They're really cool. Some of them are actually, like, I don't have any of them, but some of the older Moldoramas, because it's 50 years this year, I think, so that means it came out the same year as Star Trek. Some of the older ones are worth a fucking fortune. Like, there's a JFK head that's worth a lot. Like, and they're nice. So
ask not what your country can do for you.
Yeah, there's a few of them that are worth some serious cash. Very cool. I mean, I just like them because they're neat and they're yeah. cheap. Yeah. You know, and of course, as the sign says, it's an exclusive product.
Yeah.
So obviously,
I have a little U-505 submarine from the Museum of Science and History.
I have that as well.
That section of the Museum of Science.
The submarine's really cool.
Yeah.
As much as I'm not a World War II guy, that submarine section was pretty badass.
And you gotta admit, the Omnimax is always cool.
The Omnimax is sweet. Yeah. But they were playing shitty movies last time we were there. They weren't playing anything cool.
Like the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, it was. They were stupid. I wanted to see something about space. Space is the coolest. Yeah. I think maybe my problem with the Science and History Museum is like there's not enough stuff about space.
And all the space stuff there is a little out of date.
Yeah.
A little out of date.
Yeah, the planet Pluto.
Someday man will walk on the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One day people speculate man might even walk on the moon.
Slow down.
We put a little robot on Mars.
Yeah, put a robot on Mars.
Slow down there, Tubby. You're not on the moon yet.
Robot.
Robots. All right. Go to planetarbitrary.com for your Planet Arbitrary needs. You can follow me on Twitter at Planet Arbitrary. You can follow Steve at
Play on Steve.
You can like our Facebook page. Game Classy Podcast. Actually, whatever. You can search for us. You'll
Game
find
Assy.
Game Assy. Game Gassy. More like it.
Ho
ho. Ho ho. I got to admit, Steve, that since you started this new diet, you have been less gassy on the podcast.
It's because I produce less gas.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Unfortunately
so.
For myself. I liked farting on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. You could best way you could help out the podcast, like, comment, subscribe on iTunes, give us the 5 stars, and say that we suck. I don't care. Skander put up a review. I don't know if it was Skander for sure, but it said something about Scandinavians.
Did he give us the 5 stars and tell us we blew?
Yeah.
Nice.
So I'm assuming it was Skander.
I have a lot of Age of Sigmar books.
You have a lot of... Where are the Age of...
The stack right
oh,
there.
Oh, I see there. Yeah, you do.
I'm all in.
You are all
I'm
in.
I'm all in. I got sucked in. It's over.
it's all over.
It's over.
Have you been playing some games?
I'm still painting.
Still painting.
Yeah, you know me. I'm just like you. I don't play unless it's painted.
Yeah. I'll play if it's unpainted.
I don't do that.
If it's in the process of being painted, I'll play.
I don't do that. I especially don't do that. The last time I did that, I have a fucking phobia about it now because I have a superstition. Because the last time I played with an army that was almost finished but not actually done, someone dropped a fucking hardcover book on one of my regiments and destroyed like half the regiment.
Oh, I would punch the guy in the face.
I was just like, oh, well, he didn't do it on purpose.
I don't care.
I was just like,
Do you remember with my squat army when the kid knocked the case off the bar?
No, but that's awesome.
And I almost killed the kid. I think Max was the manager then, and he told me, go outside and breathe. Because he told the kid, he's like, you have to go because this guy's going to kill you. But anyway.
That's funny.
I think it was Max. I don't know who. It might have been Paul or something. But yeah, you could also watch us on YouTube, on the YouTubes, where I'll put up something like GW Fantasy Fight Breakup, tune in here to find out, you know, and then we'll get like 2,000 views.
We need better clickbait.
And people will be like, this is, you're clearly clickbait.
You know what you need? You need to get girls in cleavage-revealing tabletop gaming cosplay. So like a chick in a Commissar costume with like her boobies in the camera, make that the thumbnail.
I just don't like exploiting women.
Okay, then make it a dude. Make it a dude's butt.
Oh, well, now you're talking.
Yeah, sure. I'm equal opportunity, dude. Did you see the first pinup for Kingdom Death? The first guy pinup?
No, I have not.
Dude, his fucking package is out of control. Oh, man, I'm excited.
You're excited.
I'm excited. I love it.
You're just an equal opportunity exploiter.
I want that. I want the equality. The key to equality is exploiting everyone equally.
I guess, yeah.
Everyone should be exploited, but in the same rate.
And that's how our federal government works.
Oh, no, they definitely exploit the lower and middle class far more.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, they use the penal code to really wreck the poor, and they use the tax code to really wreck the middle class, and then the rich and elite get to do whatever the fuck they want, because they have the money.
They got the money.
You know, you got fucking douchebag Mitt Romney paying fucking 7% on his goddamn taxes while I'm fucking getting reamed for 40%. Like normal people. Because I can't afford fucking 17 accountants to like get me all of the tax rebate in our 70,000 page fucking tax code. Yeah, that's an accurate number. For those who are not in America, and maybe for those in America who don't know, the United States tax code is 70,000 pages. 70,000. So
I don't know. That's why Apple's getting sued by Ireland.
Oh yeah, well they're using Ireland as a tax shelter, and yeah. they have that money there.
Now the Irish are like, hey, you can't be doing that on our soil. How to talk?
You know
what?
You simplify the tax code. You make it a fucking flat rate. You don't have any
You don't make flat rate.
Oh,
no.
You do, baby. Because no. Here's the thing: we have a 35% corporate tax. Right now, we're the highest in the world. You know what the average corporation in America pays in their taxes? Fucking 12%.
Yeah.
And you know why they pay 12%? Because they have all these loopholes, all these exploits, and they get all these rebates. Wait, why do you just tax them 12%?
But you don't do a flat tax because that hurts the poor. That really hurts.
Well,
the poor.
No, I mean you want to. I'm in a corporate tax. What you really want to do?
Okay, I'll give you that. But I mean, if you're
what
talking,
you really
like,
want to do is you want a progressive income tax.
Yes.
Progressive income tax is something that 98% of economists say that we should use.
Yes.
Like, it is a consensus agreement between economists that a progressive income tax is the best thing we could do, and we don't do it. I don't know why. I'm sure it's because there are people lobbying a bunch of money because they're making a shit ton of money off of the current tax code.
Oh yeah,
that's
how it works.
Yeah, and then you know we need to make lobbying.
Why I can't get my damn Kinder guys?
Gotta break lobbying. You have to break poison pills being put into bills. This is the thing that's crazy. Like I don't know how the hell this came about in our government. And I'd like, you know, if anyone could tell me on the Facebook, I'm actually interested if you know. But how did our government get to the point where you can have a bill? So say like the Zika bill is a great example. Like, this is a bill to have emergency funding to help prevent the spread of Zika. That's the bill, right? But because of how our system works, and I don't know, maybe other countries are the same way, but person A submits that bill. Person B can say, well, also we're going to defund Planned Parenthood in this bill. And person C can be like, and we're also going to repeal this gun control law. So suddenly, this bill to make emergency funding happen for Zika also defunds Planned Parenthood and repeals a gun law.
Yeah.
How does that work? Like, how can that be a thing? That doesn't make any fucking sense. There should be one subject on a bill, period. There should never be more than one. It doesn't make any sense for them to have more than one.
Well, that's just the way our government is set up. Our government's actually not set up to make laws.
Well, it's broken.
Well, no, it's always been that way. Our government is set up to move very, very slowly. The federal government. Because it was originally designed as a federalist. It's a state run in thing. Like our states are designed to be run by themselves. The federal government
they're not doing that.
Yeah. Well, there's the bigger problem. I mean, the Civil War showed us the problems with the states, and so the federal government, you have that, and so that bills are designed to not pass.
I still stand.
It needs to be very, very, very important for a bill to pass.
I stand by. I think the federal government should be a standard setter. And it should say this is the standard you need to reach with whatever, and then it's up to the states to reach that standard. I think that would be the ideal. Obviously, it's like I said again, it's ideal, so it probably never happened. But it seems like it would make sense. Like if the government says you need to make sure that everyone in your state is provided, let's say healthcare, like you need to make sure everyone in your state has healthcare. That's all the federal government does. They go, do you do it? And then they check every state and they go, yes, no, yes, no. Do you have it? And then you get money if you do it.
Well, you can't do that because that's not in the Constitution.
Well, yeah, but maybe it's time to, you know, fix some 250-year-old rules.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying that's part of the reason why stuff can't get done is because the federal government's only real power, as described in Marbury v. Madison, is not Marbury v. Madison. It was a different law, a different case. But it's the only thing we can do is regulate interstate commerce. Thank you very much, people. This has been Political Classy. Joe Politicast. Joe explained the Constitution to Steve.
Politicast.
All right. So Steve, until next time. Go to dragonfall.com.
Dragon-fall.com. Dragon-fall.com.
Da, ba, da, ba, da,
na, na, na. Game Classy.